This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Did you ever find Bugs Bunny attractive when he'd put on a dress and play a girl bunny?
No.
Neither did I. I was just asking.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. Yeah. Didn't we lock you in a dumpster one time?
I got out.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
That's somebody's daughter up there.
I was just going to say that.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Dynamite drop in money. That broadcast school has really paid off.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Second hour, Dirt and Sprague with you here on Portland Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan. We have a lot to get to. We're going to start with some football. We normally get to go up to Seahawks training camp for a day.
We do. I know.
The home of the Hawks.
It's been like 3-4 years in a row that we've done that, I think.
We always love going up there and getting away, but we won't this year, obviously, because of COVID. So let's talk with our good friend Brady Henderson of ESPN. Covers the Seattle Seahawks. Does an exceptional job. Find him on Twitter at Brady Henderson to check in on what's going on in Seattle. And he joins us now. Brady, it's good to have you on with us, man. How's Hawk training camp going so far?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on, and I'm sorry that you guys won't make it up there, but I will be your eyes and ears. And the biggest difference in training camp so far, as the car races by me, sorry about that, is just not having fans there. It's a little bit different tempo too, just with the fact that they were kind of having to ease back in, not having had OTAs and minicamp, so you didn't really see a ton of pads early. But now it just looks like a Seahawks training camp. With the exception of not having fans there.
Yeah, the fan thing was, that always, I remember my first time there, like looking over and it was like it's like 10,000 people there watching a practice.
Strong.
It only lasts like an hour and a half. It blew me away that was the case. I'm curious, I mean, the elephant in the room in sports has been what's going on in the NBA and other leagues. We've always wondered how the NFL would handle this, and I know some teams have canceled practice. What has Seattle's response been to this? And I think I saw a quote from Pete Carroll saying there could be the chance that maybe a game does get postponed or boycotted, whatever. What has their response been in the last 24 hours in the sports world?
Yeah, and Pete Carroll didn't volunteer that. He was asked that, and he basically didn't rule it out, saying that anything is possible and that this is going to be the season of protests, was kind of paraphrasing him. And, this is a team that has always given its players leeway, or at least under Pete Carroll and John Schneider, always given their players leeway to express themselves, whether that's politically or just personally, whatever way it might be. And so whatever the Seahawks, decide to do, it doesn't sound like they have made, at least as of yesterday, that they have made any decision. Shaquille Griffin mentioned that they're going to have a conversation as a team and to try to figure out something to do as a team. And he stressed the point that whatever they do will be a group decision, and they'll do all together. But it doesn't sound like, at least as of yesterday, that they had decided anything.
Yeah, this is Brady Henderson. ESPN covers the Hawks. Does a great job. Give him a follow on Twitter. The season is looming. We're about 2 weeks away from kickoff. It feels like one of the storylines, I know there's a lot to get to with this team, and I can't wait to hear everything you're going to tell us, but one of the storylines that feels like it's kind of lingering over since he made the comments is the Russell Wilson, undefeated, leading by four at halftime. I think it's like 57-0. He's been asked about, do you just want the ball in your hands at the get-go? And he's kind of been like pretty open with it. Yeah, I love that. A lot's been made of their offense, Brady, and Brian Schottenheimer and what they do fundamentally as a team. Where do you think this is leading for the Seahawks? Do you think we're going to see more first down pass attempts, allowing Russell to maybe improvise a little more? Do you think it's not going to change a thing? What have you made of this storyline? It's kind of been looming now for, I want to say, a week, maybe two.
Yeah, and it's really been going on kind of behind the scenes longer than that. And from what I understand, this is something that Wilson is very passionate about. And, you know, he is not one to publicly, you know, ruffle feathers or rock the boat. So he said, I think, as much as he's going to say about it, which is that, you know, he wants them to treat every quarter like the fourth quarter, which is when you usually see them, you know, kind of unleash Wilson. He made the point that he wants the ball in his hands earlier in games. And I don't think that you're going to see them all of a sudden, you know, you're not going to see Pete Carroll at 68 years old all of a sudden change his stripes and turn into Andy Reid and let Wilson chuck the ball 40 times a game. You're just not going to see that. But I do think that that is one way where they can, you know, appease their the most important player in the franchise, which is to let him, you know, get going a little bit earlier in games. You know, Brian Schottenheimer was asked about it this week, and he said that it's always going to depend on, you know, matchups and game plans, et cetera. And that brought me back to one game last November when it was a home game against Tampa Bay. And I think Tampa Bay, you know, was lousy last season, but they came into that game with, you know, the NFL's best run defense. And you saw the Seahawks come out of that game, and it was just all Wilson on their first drive. It was maybe even for their first two drives, it was a steady dose of Wilson passes. And it really stood out because, as we all know, anybody who's watched Seahawks games knows that they like to, you know, quote unquote, establish the run early. So when Brian Schottenheimer said that, that game kind of popped into my mind. I think it's, you know, I think that they're going to try, knowing how important it is to Wilson and maybe sensing some frustration on his part. I do think they're going to do maybe give in a little bit there, but they're not going to change their offense entirely.
Yeah. Well, one of the tougher parts, I think, and we all love to make fun of preseason football, but it does have a big impact on guys making rosters and showing something. And I think fans, there's something you can get out of it, just watching your team play and learning about the new guys, that kind of stuff. Not having that, like, what have we heard? I think they've had one scrimmage, if I'm not mistaken. Like, what have the notes been from a scrimmage and practices and that kind of stuff about how the roster's looking so far?
Yeah, they had their second scrimmage yesterday, and their first scrimmage was cut short because Brandon Jackson got hurt. So they've really had one and a half scrimmages, and you know, those preseason games are really for, I think, more so for those bottom of the roster guys. You know, those final 10 spots that you go into camp, not really certain who's going to claim those final 10 spots. And so, it's more so on practice, and you know, with those two scrimmages, they're going to have another one in a few days, which will be their final one. And so, I'm in a tough spot because we are limited in what we can say in terms of what we see, just because, you know, again, there's not fans there. When there's fans there, it's kind of fair game. But, you know, I think the receiver battle is going to be one to watch. The offensive line, it seems like it's mostly taking shape, with the exception of a pretty interesting situation at center where, you know, they paid B.J. Finney some money in free agency, and for whatever reason, he has not been not looked all that impressive to them, and that's why they've got Ethan Postick there running with the first team at center. And so that's one of those spots that is still to be determined over the final, you know, couple weeks until the season starts. But as of right now, in kind of a surprise, it looks like Ethan Postick is the front runner of that job.
Well, Brady, I want to pick your brain on one particular player because the history, I mean, you look at the Seahawks, K.J. Wright, Bobby Wagner, they have found really good players in the draft, and some have been questioned. They snuck into the first round and got Jordan Brooks, who many projected to be a second to third rounder, depending on the mock you looked at. And I was on Twitter the night the draft was happening, and I saw some Seahawk fans and whatnot kind of questioning aloud why they would make that pick. What has he been like in camp thus far, working in with some of those vets like Bobby Wagner? And do you feel like the team, do you feel like that they've been satisfied with picking him late in the first round and kind of living up to maybe some of the questions or showing people that he deserved to be picked where he was picked?
Yeah, I don't think they've seen anything from him that would make them second guess that decision. You know, I think that the issue for him is that he was drafted into a pretty crowded position, and they feel like he's best positioned. They feel like he could play all three spots eventually, but they want to start him, or begin him, I should say, at the weak side spot, which is, of course, where K.J. Wright has played for, you know, the past nine seasons. And so he's very much in a competition with KJ Wright for playing time there. And, you know, we'll see whether they work him in or whether, you know, I don't think you can entirely rule out the possibility that they end up cutting KJ Wright if they feel like Brooks is ready to play. You know, they already paid Wright $1 million roster bonus, and you typically don't see teams cut guys after paying them a roster bonus, but, you know, they would save, I think, $6.5 million. And so I wouldn't rule it out, and that would obviously be a very difficult decision and one that would not go over very well in the locker room, yeah, given how respected KJ Wright is. But, you know, back to the conversation about drafting Brooks in the first round, I think that pick really highlighted the difference there is a lot of times between what the draft analyst community thinks and what the actual NFL thinks. And from what I heard after that, I apologize.
Are you next to the Bugattis right now in the parking lot? Like,
that is the loudest motorcycle I think I've ever heard in my life. Sorry about that. He really revved it up knowing I was on with you guys.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
But, you know, there's a difference a lot of times between what draft analysts project and what they think and what NFL teams think. Yeah. And, you know, from what I heard, there was a number of teams that had Brooks as their second best linebacker, you know, not just among the guys who were available at that spot, but the second best linebacker, second or third best linebacker. I heard that Baltimore was, you know, would have taken him with their pick had the Seahawks not taken Brooks right before that. Of course, Baltimore then drafted Patrick Queen, the linebacker from LSU, right after Seattle took Brooks. So the point is, what draft analysts think and what you see in the projection, that doesn't always align with how NFL teams see it. And I think that was the case with Brooks.
Yeah. Any update on the going after of a veteran wide receiver? I know that's been flirted with all offseason. We've found out Antonio Brown has to be suspended for 8 games or 8 weeks, whether he's on a team or not. So he'll be available by week 9. Josh Gordon, Antonio Brown, any chatter about that?
Well, they brought in Paul Richardson for what I, according to the NFL transaction wire, was a tryout yesterday.
Okay.
And, you know, that move makes a lot of sense. Obviously, a guy who has been there, knows the system. You know, before that, the conversation was about Antonio Brown and Josh Gordon, like you said. And Antonio Brown has never seemed all that likely to me just because of the issues that he's facing, specifically, you know, the issue of you know, sexual assault. And I think that's obviously a big issue for any team. I think it's an especially big issue for a team like the Seahawks, who, you know, dealt with some pretty severe backlash from their decision to draft Frank Clark in 2015, mm-hmm. Not only public backlash, but internal backlash after he was involved in an incident of alleged domestic violence. So, you know, this organization, you know, from my perspective, has really taken a very serious approach to issues, you know, any sort of issues with violence against women. And so it's been very hard for me, if not impossible for me, to imagine them signing Antonio Brown while he still stands accused of sexual assault. So unless something changes there, that has never seemed likely to me. I think Gordon is, you know, seemed a lot more likely just because they know what he is, and they were really happy with how he conducted himself in the building last year, knows the offense, the coaches trust him. And so if it's of those two, Gordon has always seemed a lot more likely, but the fact is right now he remains suspended, and that's why you see them looking at Paul Richardson.
Brady, my producer's going to hate me for asking one last because we're already over the clock, but as quickly as you can, we've had two teams already announced they're not going to have fans in the stadium this year, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, just as we were talking. Where do you think ultimately it's going to happen in the NFL? Do you think we're going to have some teams that get a home field advantage and some teams that just don't get home crowd at all?
I think you are going to see some teams that have fans in the stadium, but in terms of the advantage, I think that could be mitigated because, you know, if you have, you know, like Arrowhead Stadium, if you have a limited capacity in there, you know, that may not be as loud as a team with no fans, but the ability to pipe in the crowd noise, like, you know, what the Seahawks are planning to do for at least their first 3 home games while they don't have fans in there. So that'll be interesting to see. And, you know, right now that's something the Seahawks are working with, is trying to figure out how loud to make it, because it's not like you can turn it down, you know, when the offense is on the field and then crank it up when the defense is on the field. It has to stay that way the entire game.
Absolutely. Good stuff, man. Brady Henderson, ESPN, does a great job covering the Hawks. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Brady Henderson. Thank you for the check-in from camp, man. I still have a few more questions, so let's catch up maybe in 2 weeks to see where they're at. The season will be looming at that point, and we'd love to have you back on.
You got it. Call me anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, there we go. Our good friend Brady Henderson in Seattle covers the Seattle Seahawks for ESPN, does an exceptional job. I want to talk about the Russell Wilson thing a little bit. Should you unleash him or just stick in your ways and try to run the ball every time? We'll get to that next on The Fan. All right, we'll give you an update on Damian Lillard. He left the bubble.
He's home. He's probably listening to the show right now. What's up, Dame?
Oh, Dame's a big P1.
A big P1 of the show.
Huge P1.
Yeah, listens every day.
Him, his brother Houston, they're huge P1s. They love to hear what we have to say.
They dialed it up on the radio.com app live from the bubble.
Sometimes he'll text and be like, look, your co-host's pretty hard on my guy CJ, but I love the show today. I'm always like, thanks, Dame. Have a great day. So we'll give you an update on that. Jerry Brewer will join us at 2 o'clock. I thought he wrote a very powerful piece from the Washington Post on the NBA strike that happened yesterday. So he'll join us at 2. But I'm going to read a list of names.
Okay.
And before I do, I'm going to ask you this question. It's going to be prefaced with, you want this guy throwing more passes than Russell Wilson.
Oh.
Would you like this guy, Mitchell Trubisky, to throw more passes in a game than Russell Wilson?
Nope.
Would you like this guy, Andy Dalton, to throw more passes in a game than Russell Wilson?
He is the red rifle, but I'm going to vote no on that one, Bob.
What about Baker Mayfield?
No.
What about Kyler Murray?
No.
What about Aaron Rodgers?
Maybe, but probably no.
Phillip Rivers?
Nope.
Dak?
No. No, thank you, sir.
Carson Wentz?
Nope.
43-year-old Tom Brady.
I'll save you some time. There's only one name that I'm going to say yes to. He's the Super Bowl MVP.
Okay. Well, by the way, that's coincidentally, he is 18th in pass attempts last year, but he he suffered the injury and he was out a few games. Russell Wilson was 12th in the NFL in pass attempts. He was tied. He threw as many passes last year as Mitchell Trubisky.
He was also 6th in yards, so it tells you attempts not necessarily needed for him to finish in the top 5 in yards.
And he has kind of alluded to this, and this has been a subplot of Seahawks training camp, is what they do. And quite frankly, when he spoke out about it, and he's Russell Wilson, so he's not going to get too... he's not going to be on the tack too much. He's a very nice, respectful individual who wants kumbaya in the locker room. So I get it.
Sure.
When it comes to what your game plan is with Russell Wilson at quarterback, you can't refute that they won a Super Bowl running the ball. But to Brady's point, I do think Pete Carroll at 68, 65, or 78, you should always be willing to be flexible in the NFL. If you do not evolve in the NFL, you do not make it. And I don't understand why, but they need to unleash him. Yeah. They don't have the greatest of running games. They don't have the greatest of running backs. Their offensive line, we just heard it from Brady, it's already suspect at one position. I don't understand this fascination with we have to run the ball, we have to run the ball. You have maybe the most talented quarterback in the NFL. To me, I think he's the best quarterback in the NFL. And he's 12th in pass attempts. What the hell are we doing?
It's a great question, Bob. I've been asking that for the last 5 years. I understood the strategy early on in his career because of your ability to run the ball and play defense. You didn't need him to do a lot. Just go out there and manage the game. That's not quite the case anymore, and he has evolved incredibly as a player, and it is time to unleash him. I think the part of it that would leave me frustrated as a Seahawks fan, one, is you get to see how other quarterbacks are able to thrive in systems that allow them to be themselves. Baltimore with Lamar Jackson, I know it's a small sample size, but Kansas City, I mean, they basically play the offensive hike it to Mahomes and go out there and make something happen. And I'm not arguing that Seattle needs to do that every time, because I think last year before the running backs got hurt, they actually were a good rushing team. Their offensive line isn't great, but they were able to run the ball decently effective. The problem is, though, I would argue that doesn't give you the best chance to win. And when you look up at the end of the season, and yes, you're in the playoffs, it feels like every year, but you rely a ton on your home field advantage and having the ability to play it in I know this year is going to be different, but in normal years, play late games, a divisional round game or a wild card round game or a conference championship game at Seattle. Like, that gives you a huge leg up on your competition. And last year, they had a great season. He had a great season. As a team, they were a good team. They came a couple of yards away from winning the division. And then you look up and you got to go to Philly in the wild card round. You got to go to Green Bay in the divisional round. And they would have had to go to San Francisco if they would have beaten Green Bay in that playoff game. It just makes their run to the Super Bowl that much more difficult. And I would argue Russell Wilson making plays and being himself for four quarters gives you the best chance week in and week out to win football games.
I mean, I would look at the team that won the Super Bowl because I watched them carve up the best defense in the NFL, in my opinion, last year, the 49ers. Now, they were being held in check for relatively the whole game, but what you saw late when the dam finally burst and the points started coming out for Kansas City and they won, you just, when you have a talented quarterback, the NFL's almost kind of been a reverse to what it was. Like, we used to talk about, you need that strong run game to set up play action attack. It's not really like that anymore. Now, I'm not going to argue that having a good running game is not valuable. Absolutely, there's value in that. But when you have what the NFL is made now, it's a pass-happy league where relatively the quarterback can't get touched. When you have an athletic, mobile guy with one of the bigger arms in the league, I think you actually, you benefit your run game more by going to him more.
Yep.
Because you can create schemes and attacks that put defenses second guessing. So in situations where it's almost the reverse, right? So traditionally, people pointed this out, Seattle loves to run the ball on first down.
Yes.
If you were reverse that, you get defenses that you get them a little off kilter a little bit. I saw this with Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes' ability with his arm is so, it's so lethal and so great that defenses respect the living hell out of it. And you can create better running gaps for guys like Damian Williams and company who are in your backfield.
They did it against Tennessee in the playoffs last
year. And I think that's why you saw the exclamation point in the Super Bowl was that Damian Williams little wheel route. I think it creates those avenues as well more and more. So, look, I'm not the most X's and O's savvy guy. I'm sure we got high school coaches that hear this show from time to time and roll their eyes. I won't argue that. But I've seen it as a fan when you have a extremely talented quarterback, how that can impact your offense in so many other ways where it's not the traditional run on first down, set up a good second down, maybe run it again and set up a third and short or a third and manageable. That's not the NFL as much anymore now. Now it is about trusting a quarterback. And when you have a quarterback, it's why these guys are making 35 to 40 mil, because you know you can put the ball in their hands more. And they can actually set you up for success. I do think Seattle would benefit even more, and they've been good, but I think they would benefit more if they just trusted Russell and allowed him to get within the top five of pass attempts.
Yeah, he should, man. There's no excuse for a quarterback of his skill to not be in the top five. And the other thing you have going for you is, for all the criticisms of quarterbacks that run around and use their legs, can they last? The guy's an iron man. He's been in the league since 2012. He's never missed a game. He's played 16 games every year of his career. It's remarkable over an eight-year run. Going towards being a decade in the NFL. He's a guy that uses his legs a ton, has a handful of years with over 100 rushing attempts, and he's been able to stay durable. So that should, I would hope, leave a little bit of that fear in your mind of him potentially getting hurt. Just go out there and trust him, man. He's the top three quarterback in the NFL, and I think it starts on first down, starts early in ball games. You see how effective he is late. If he can do that in the fourth, he can do it the entire ball game.
Do you think ultimately they're going to be in a position this year where he's somewhere where he was last year, maybe 10 through
12? I think it'll be slightly better. I don't think it'll be as bad as it was last year, but you have to evolve to your point. Like, watch this year what New England's going to do on offense. Bill Belichick is not a zone read, spread him out. Like, that's not his offense, but watch what they're going to run with Cam Newton.
They might change it up,
right? Yeah. They're going to change it up. That's not what McDaniels is used to, but you use the pieces you have, and I would hope Seattle could do the same.
All right, coming up next, we got Jerry Brewer at the top of the 2 o'clock hour with a great piece on the Washington Post about what the NBA is going through right now and the athlete's perspective. So we'll get to that. We got crunch time around the corner, but up next, we'll give you an update. Damian Lillard left the bubble to have the knee re-examined. Are we nervous about this, or are they just letting him go home early? We'll get to that next.
Welcome back in 135. The NBA went through quite the interesting day yesterday. And then as it went on, we knew there was a player meeting going on. Is the season going to continue? What the hell's happening? Damian Lillard was one of the players in that meeting. He spoke up on a number of occasions. And then as the evening wrapped up and concluded, we got the news bomb that he's out. He's getting the hell out of the bubble. Now, yesterday likely would have been their last day anyways. If the games wouldn't have been canceled, Portland would have lost to LA and their season would have been done. And the entire team would have been on their way home today. But since that was not the case, Damian Lillard left the bubble. And he is returning to Portland, and there was a picture that he posted on Instagram today of him with his son for the first time in weeks. And it was used as an explanation for further examination of his sprained right knee.
Yeah.
How are we feeling about that?
Well, I think it's easy to see that news. By the way, Haynes added to that injury that he couldn't extend his leg. Now, look, I think I'm going to try to stay optimistic on this. I heard this morning on the show, you know, the reasoning and how it could be something far more serious than just a sprained knee. And I understand that, but I'm kind of viewing this through the lens of optimism that there's nothing more to this than him wanting to get home because they're going to get bounced whenever they resume the series against the Lakers.
Did you think that they needed to use an excuse for him to go home early?
No,
like, would that have been acceptable if he was like, I just wanted to get the hell out of here?
Well, they said that he could return to the bubble. So they left it open-ended. And I think that's a way to also kind of cover the, we don't want him. Because I think there's an idea with Dame, and I'm not poking a hole at him or the team on this. I think it sits better when you say he's going to have his knee re-examined and he could return to the bubble versus just saying Damian Lillard hurt his knee. The team's not good now.
Yeah, he's done.
The Lakers are going to beat us. We're sending him home to rest before everybody else. I think he's always about the team. So it looks better from a team perspective.
Okay.
And I hope I'm not wrong. I hope that we don't get news that the injury is far greater than just a sprained knee. But my interpretation is just more of precautionary slash let's get him home because we know this series. He's not returning. They're not winning this series. It's done. It's finito.
Right.
So I'm viewing it from the optimistic side of allow Damian Lillard to go home because God help us if that injury is far more serious than just a sprained knee.
I saw some people pointing out, and we had a few listeners that did this on Twitter today, pointing out the news drops of the Zach Collins injury where it started where he just played 7 minutes against Memphis. They didn't really say why. We thought it was just because he was playing like trash in the bubble. And then it was a foot injury and he was going to be out game one. And then after game one, it was, oh, by the way, he's going to need surgery and he's done for the year.
And I understand why people feel that based on that. Yeah,
it kind of escalated. Now, to Dame's point, or at least to his credit, he posted on Instagram, as I mentioned today, a photo of him with his son, which is a great picture. You know, it's been a long time since he's seen his family. Those guys, that can't be easy. He put this in the caption on Instagram. He said, dislocated finger, lateral knee sprain, but this is good for the soul. Missed my baby boy. So he says a lateral knee sprain. I tend to agree with you, and I am going to remain optimistic because right now it is too scary to think about the notion of this being more serious. Now, we don't know how long the recovery time for whatever it is, and if he's back, when he's back. I don't even want to go there yet because that changes the whole landscape of next season. It is funny, though, when teams have to kind of cover their tracks on a decision like this, because if that does end up being the case, it's so funny to me that you're worried about the PR hit of just saying, you know what, like, we're done. He's not. Like, it's over. We're just sending him home. He's ready to go home. He was going to go home today. He's out of here. We'll play. If we win, we'll play a game six. But, like, we even had listeners texting in earlier to the show asking, well, what's the process for him coming back? Can he return? Like,
right.
Dude, they're a game away from being eliminated. They're not going to win three in a row against L.A.
Do you want him to come back? Because I don't.
No, I don't. Like, if they win game five and he can come back for game six, like, No, I don't want that. Like, I'm okay with that. They're not going to win three straight win this series. It's just funny how if that ends up being the case, they have to say further examination because they're worried about the PR hit, like they're giving up on the series.
Well, and to that, like, if you really want to know what's the timetable, if somehow they were, let's say, a couple more days and he checks out okay and wants to come back, just the hypothetical of that, he would have to quarantine for 4 days before he could return to action. So you're basically banking on the Blazers will win a game without him. And then he'll be examinated and then maybe he'll be in that game, but he might miss that. And then if somehow you push this to seven, maybe he'll be available. That's why I think they worded it right. And while they may have given some optimism he'll return, I don't think there's any chance he's going back to Orlando. I think now that he landed in Portland or is going to land in Portland, that is a done deal. To your point, though, on the PR wording of further examination, and that can be scary. And maybe it's a way for them to just say outwardly, Dame's going home. He's tired. He wants to see his kid.
Yeah.
I can't imagine the pushback, though, and the anger that they're setting themselves up as a team if this injury is a far more serious injury than a lateral or regular knee sprain, if there's a difference in those. But
they have issues with knees in the past. We know that.
If it is and I'm not even going to throw out what the possibilities are because I think we all know them in our head, but if it is a much more serious injury than a knee sprain and they report that, it's going to be totally fair for the people who are very vocal that are against them on the way they're evaluating these injuries, or at least the way that they're diagnosing or explaining what these injuries are to their fans and to the media in general. Because you're right, you can't have a Zach Collins issue pop up and then with your superstar franchise guy,
that's no big deal.
Do the same thing and then be like, oh, I'm sorry, it's actually just not a minor issue. He's got a blank injury.
Yeah.
We don't know what the return is. It usually is blank amount of time.
Yeah.
Because that's going to backfire more in your face than it would him being reexamined with the potential 2% chance that he returns to Orlando.
Yeah, P1 Dicker chimed in and said, I think Dame scheduled that private jet and that flight was leaving back to Portland with or without him, and it was paid for, so they just needed an excuse. I mean, that could have been the case, honestly, because they probably didn't expect to win last night's game, and their season would have been done today, and they would have been leaving the bubble. And it was like, all right, well, if the team's still here, I'm getting the hell out of here, man.
Well, we haven't ruled what day they're going to play the Lakers, right? For game
Nobody
five.
Nobody knows. Yeah. They're all speculating. I would imagine they get back up on Saturday at the soonest. They're not playing for sure today. They might want to give them one more day. My guess would be Saturday.
Well, let's say it's Saturday. They play game five. They're not winning. Like, he's not coming back to the bubble. I guess I don't even know the point of talking about that. I know they left it open-ended and it's been said he has to quarantine for 4 days. So he's going to come home. He's going to see his kid, sleep in his own bed.
Get reevaluated. Don't forget that.
Take a crap in his own toilet,
it's got to feel nice.
You can't beat that feeling.
Yeah, he's going to get his old throne back.
And then he's going to go, oh, okay, great. Just confirmed it's a sprained knee and swollen I can't, but I'm going to go back to Orlando for 2 days.
Yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me. I don't want to be wrong on this, so I'm going to assume that
I'm
positive. Right.
Yeah. We'll stay positive. That was a bit of a news drop last night. Everything was going on, and you get that one, like, Dame's leaving the bubble. Like, wait, what? But yes, I tend to agree with
you. Did you read the first part of it, Dame leaving the bubble, and before you get to the knee, split second, think, oh, he's taking the boycott a step further.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
And then you see to be re-examined.
Yeah, then you get a little scared by it. But we're going to stay positive. Dame, there was an Instagram post. He called it a lateral knee sprain. He was on a private jet with his son, so he's probably back in Portland at this point, I would imagine. So there you go. There's the Damian Lillard update. Let's get to the situation in the Big Ten as it continues to unravel a little bit for the conference. Kevin Warren not having a great couple of months as the parents continue to be pissed and a lawsuit was filed today. What the hell is going on? We'll get to that crunch time coming up next on The Fam.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, the Beaverton and Lower Division locations all up and running. Go check them out, crunch.com. They got great deals going on in the month of August. Stop by one of their three locations. I was at the Glorious House of Gaines this morning.
Let's go.
Thanks, Tommy.
I was at the practice range.
Were you? Getting some balls in?
I was doing chipping and putting.
Look at you.
My putts have been horrific.
You got to work on that putting, man.
How many putts do you think you average around? I've been, by the way, add me on this app called The Grint.
You're a Grint guy?
I'm a Grint guy because I'm not going to buy a rangefinder.
Sure.
So it just gives me like the distance on the app.
You need to get a handicap, man. That's what you need.
That's going.
Okay.
But I've been looking at my putts per round and talking to people who are better golfers than I. And the difference in that number is alarming. And I already knew I was bad.
How many putts per round are you averaging?
What day?
What round? Are we in the 40s?
My last round, I had 43.
Ooh,
the round before that?
That's going to get you.
36.
Okay.
No, that's not good.
I mean, you're two-putting. I mean, you know.
My best round I had.
Technically two-putting everything.
Yeah. I'm trying.
If you have 36 putts and you're hitting the ball well, that's not, I mean, it's not ideal.
Yeah.
But if you're on and two and you're two-putting, like, that's manageable.
Well, before the COVID scare, I had a lesson. I had a swinging lesson.
Yeah.
With the same coach who's coaching Jason Swigart.
Yes, the oldest man in the golf industry.
His name's Harold Bluestein.
What's up, Harold?
And I was scheduled to go out there, but I had to cancel it. I've realized that, you know, my biggest problem in golf, aside from not being good at it.
Let's talk about your golf game.
I'm a head case.
Yeah, you are.
I'm
every golfer's a head case.
Yeah, but like I'm really a head case.
You got to get out of your own melon, man. Just get out there and swing.
And I've put
positive vibes only, baby.
And I've put it on the putting green now.
Yeah.
So it's not been going well, but it was nice to get out and get practice.
There you go. Hey, practice makes perfect, man. You got to get those shots up.
I don't like this relationship we have where we discuss our golf game and you never complain about anything and I complain about everything.
You want me to complain about my round on Saturday?
What'd you shoot? What's your bad round? Let's hear the bad round from Dirt. Go ahead. 78?
No, I was very upset because I shot an 82.
Oh, man, you poor guy.
But I went 46 on the front, 36 on the back.
Sounds like a tough day for you.
Yeah, it's like, why can't you just put up a fight on the front nine? Come on, man. Shoot even on the back? Give me a puncher's chance.
Swag did this to me yesterday.
If I come out and shoot a 40 on the front, I'm firing up a 76. I'm feeling great.
I don't think people like you, I heard Rob bitching about this. Like, you guys need to shut up. Nobody cares about how bad you are when you're still shooting in the 70s.
Yeah, there's differing levels. Everybody gets frustrated.
Yeah, I get that. But do you realize how good that is?
I mean, you guys are not pro golfers.
You're shooting in their 70s.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. Yeah, you can always be better, though. That's the beauty of golf. There's always shots that you can replace. Until I shoot even par.
I would say until you get to retirement, you're not you.
I'm a work
but
in
like,
progress.
I'll take Rop. By all indicators, I've heard Rop is like a 2 handicap. If you're a 2 to 3 handicap, you're never going to get better until you do not work anymore and you literally spend all day.
That's true. Yeah, you got to retire early.
Like the whole, I got to keep grinding. You can't get better if you still have a job.
Got to keep grinding, man. I've taken my handicap from like an 11.7 down to a 7.6 in the last month.
Jeez. That's amazing. Okay,
keep grinding, baby. Let's go.
It's amazing to me.
We've got things to accomplish this summer.
I didn't want to make crunch time about golf. I know some people hate it, but yeah.
It's okay. Everybody gets frustrated by golf. Let's talk about the Big Ten. Talk about frustration. The parents are frustrated. They continue to protest the Big Ten's decision to postpone their season. And it escalated to the point today where it's not only the parents anymore. The players are taking it to another level. As today, a group of Nebraska football players filed a lawsuit hoping that a jury will force the Big Ten to reinstate a fall football season. The lawsuit, which was filed in Lancaster County District Court, I'm assuming that's Lincoln? Contends, among other things, that the players are losing a chance for development, exposure for a possible pro career, and won't be able to market themselves to eventually capitalize on name, image, and likeness revenue opportunities, to which I think a pretty simple retort would be, we're trying to play in the fall, in the winter, if that happens, aren't all those opportunities still going to be on the table? I have seen a handful of Pac-12 players tweet about this, one including Kayvon Thibodeau of Oregon, who sent out kind of a joking tweet of like, where's that We Are United front now? Because remember when the Big Ten was a part of that Are United thing? And your parents protesting, players filing lawsuit. It just is, they're having a hell of a time out there in Big Ten country.
They are. They're not dealing with it well. And by the way, update. North Carolina State is sending all their kids home from their dorms.
North Carolina State already postponed their first football game, too.
They have to contain the rapid spread of coronavirus. Yep. So North Carolina State's dealing with this splendidly.
We have two other football games that were scheduled to kick off on Labor Day weekend, I believe, that were part of that quote-unquote week one that were also postponed today.
I sympathize with kids who feel like this is their last chance to maybe try to put their name out there and live a dream. I sympathize with kids who know they're not going to the NFL. They don't really care about playing in these minor league systems that pay them almost nothing. And it's more about the last hurrah with their guys. I get it, man. I cried on my senior night playing sports. I get it.
Bawled like a baby.
And you know you're never going to get that brotherhood back to a certain extent. I sympathize with it. And I sympathize with the parents who want to see their kids suit up one last time and have a senior day. Yeah, I can't tell you how special that is. Covering a senior day and seeing them get announced and they get an ovation and the coach hugs them, and that's a special time. You are losing me here. I don't know if I'm like way out there in left field or center field or wherever the hell you want to put me. I don't understand this. Like, you're going to like legal ramifications because a commissioner and the conference presidents decided to not play during a rapid spread of a global pandemic.
Yeah.
It is, I can't put my head around that. Like, you're arguing and upset because somebody doesn't want your kid to play during a global pandemic because of the legal risk. These people are losing me every single day that this continues, and have fun wasting your money on legal representation for what?
It's not going to go anywhere. The Big Ten hasn't commented on it yet. They've been asked for comment. There was a story I was reading on the Associated Press. Gabe Feldman, who is a director of Tulane's University Sports Law Program, He basically said this is a publicity lawsuit. It's not going to go anywhere. He said it would be a monumental shift in how the law treats college sports if a judge declared that a conference cannot shut a season down because they thought it was unsafe to play. It's all about publicity. That's kind of what they're striving for. I continue to find it fascinating how the different conferences have handled it. The Pac-12 being very unified in their message and not really having any issues. Every coach has spoken pretty eloquently on it. David Shaw, most recently, I heard him, I think it was on Greenberg's new show, and there's a clip that went viral of him basically saying, like, dude, when I told our players about it, man, it was met with support and a round of applause because they feel like medical experts are doing what's best for us. Doesn't mean the kids aren't disappointed and upset about not having the chance to play this year, but at least in the Big Ten's case as well, and I think the Pac-10 will eventually follow, or Pac-12 will follow suit if they aren't already, they are putting a plan to action to go for January. Like, the plans are surfacing of they want to play in dome stadiums because they know the weather's going to be an issue. They want to start practice in late December or January 1st, get to playing games at some point in January, late January. Like, yeah. Their plan is starting to come to fruition. And there was one other note. We could get to this a little bit more in the final hour, but one of the main issues in Pac-12 country that we saw, and I know the Pac-12 and Big Ten were pretty lockstep on the reasonings to not have the season. There were two main issues. One, not understanding fully the virus and the myocarditis, what it can do to your heart. Mm-hmm. Two, not the issue of not having students or having students is kind of weird. But the other one is the testing limits in certain areas. I know that was a big issue for the Pac-12. They said in the Arizona area and the LA area, like, you don't have enough testing for daily testing. Did you guys see the news about Abbott Labs yesterday? That they, I guess, got emergency approval from the FDA about a rapid test?
Yeah, it takes
15 minutes, 15. And they're calling it a game changer. Mm-hmm. Now, I think it's not quite there yet. Their stock is way up, so hopefully you bought Abbott stock yesterday.
I invested.
But it's, you know, it's basically the size of a credit card. It's going to cost $5. It comes with a free mobile app. It's going to let people who test negative display a temporary date-stamped health pass that will renew each time the test is taken. It sounds like you can take it at home. Like, it replaces the old nasal swab stuff. Like, that kind of thing would be a game changer. And if that ends up coming and hitting the market in, you know, October or September, whenever it might be, like, that's exactly what the Pac-12 was kind of waiting for, and it would make it a lot easier for them to be able to test guys and play a season that starts in January. So I think just continue to follow that. But the lawsuit, you're just doing it for publicity. Like, let's put our eggs in the basket of playing a season in January. Let's get on the same page here.
And I think that's kind of always been my feeling, is like, okay, if fall is taken away, work immediately now on late winter. Maybe in the season and very early spring. Maybe if you can end it even in late winter, that would be ideal. And let's go. Stop worrying right. about the decision. It's already been
made. It's not going to happen. You're not going to play this fall.
And I think the weirdest thing to me is seeing, like, I saw one of the moms of one of the players, like, she went public on, it might have been Facebook or something, but she basically was just like, what? They haven't even given us a reason. What's the reason?
It's like, they have.
They don't need to. Here's the reason. Global pandemic.
Yeah, but they have, and that drives me nuts. They have given you a reason. I know it's not exactly, they didn't handle it as well as the Pac-12
did.
These
people are Looney Tunes, man. Like, you are putting, look, the players might be okay. I know the rate of the youth and what it is. The presidents don't want to deal with litigation, lawsuits. They don't want to deal with not having enough adequate testing and conditions for the players. There's your two reasons.
Yeah.
I shouldn't need to explain that to you. It's a global pandemic, for God's sakes. These parents are driving me crazy.
Yeah, so players not happy, they're filing lawsuits. Parents are not happy, they're protesting. That's the latest out of the Big Ten.
Did you see the state of Ohio? This story, and I know we got Jerry Brewer. This story in Ohio, they're doing high school football. They mm-hmm. already had a game stopped. The principal had to stop the game, or the athletic director stopped the game and told the parents and the supporters in the stands, if they didn't wear a mask and social distance, they weren't finishing the game.
Right.
And he stood on the field for 15 minutes because people didn't think he was serious.
Like, I'm sending everybody home.
And they finally masked up and they distanced each other. I don't get the people that want it so bad, yet they won't do what's asked.
Yeah.
It's remarkable.
It's a pretty
to
simple
me.
Solution.
Just comply. Isn't right. that what Jacob Blake was supposed right. to do? Just comply. Just if you're not complying with mask etiquette, I don't know what to tell you.
Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, Beaverton Aloha Division. All back up and running. Go check them out. Crunch.com. Stop by one of their three locations. Great people. They got great deals going on in the month of August. Go check them out. Lots to get to in the final hour of the show. I do want to get a little bit more into that testing. I find that a pretty big story. We'll dive into the NBA. What the landscape is around sports tonight is some are playing, some aren't playing. We'll start, though, with Jerry Brewer. He's a columnist for the Washington Post. Wrote a great piece about what happened yesterday in the NBA. So we'll kick off the final hour with Jerry Brewer. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Spraying on 1080 The Fan.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.